LBC presents Adrian Love's Nightline with studio guests.
Hello there.
Unlikely questions.
Can you hear me?
And bad jokes.
Shot it down with his anti-aircraft gun.
With the odd record or two. And your phone calls.
Hello?
All this and more on Nightline tonight with Adrian Love from LBC on transistor stereo radiograms and all good radio receivers.
LBC.
4 weeks later.
You're listening to LBC, 417 medium wave, 97.3 stereo, where news comes first.
After Courtline, it's Punchline, LBC's answer to the urban crisis.
Punchline, where the fun comes fast and the phone calls come furious.
And what a great bank holiday bumper bonanza we've got lined up for you this week.
We certainly have, Duncan. This week we look at the secret tragedy of the Osmond family, who had five sons who weren't born deaf and dumb.
Also, we'll be looking at the Daily Express Harris poll, which revealed that 13% of the people interviewed were called Harris.
And it's LBC giveaway time. There'll be free bottles of Domestos for the winners of our lightning impersonations quiz.
I put it to you, George. Don't you think, as a politician, that in the second half of the 20th century as we are now...
You'll have another chance with that one later on. Meanwhile...
The appointment of Nelson Rockefeller to the position of vice president by President Ford has clearly been the major news item in America this week. Mr. Rockefeller has long been a distinguished statesman, the governor of the state of New York, a respected figure in the oil and banking worlds, and a multimillionaire in his own right. Today, on his first visit to this country since the appointment, he is with us in the LBC studio. Vice President, may I first of all offer you my congratulations on the appointment and welcome you here.
Thank you very much. May I say that this great country of yours has always had a place in my heart, and I am second to none in my respect and admiration for the role this country has played in world affairs. Where the hell am I?
Now, the first thing, Vice President, that I would like to ask you, and I think the most important thing, is can you spare us a fiver?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand.
Can you, you know, just give us a little bit of bread? I mean some money.
Oh, you mean money? I'm afraid I never carry any money on me, as a matter of fact.
Everybody's seen your houses, and you've got the Nelson Rockefeller Center.
That's true.
You've got lots of estates. You've got all your oil interests, your stocks and shares.
But,
come on, just a quid.
You don't seem to understand.
Well, 50 pence.
I'm very wealthy on paper.
The appointment of Nelson Rockefeller will obviously have a considerably steadying effect on the Western economy. Well, here's our economics correspondent, Noel Trowell, with his assessment.
I noticed that when Mr. Rockefeller was appointed, he said he felt like $1 billion. What that means to those of us on this side of the Atlantic is, of course, £3,988,000,84p. This contrasts sharply with what Vice President Agnew felt when he was appointed and claimed to feel like $1 million, which was, of course, then worth a mere £401,665.22, up by nearly £1,120 on what he would have felt like today, given the current situation of the pound. France, of course, has even more cause for enthusiasm at his appointment. This has greatly cheered the financial community in France, since $1 billion there would be just about equivalent to over 5 billion francs, which is better than a slap across the face with a wet poisson. In America, the stock exchange has cheered since the slide last week after the collapse of electronics firms in the wake of Mr. Nixon's resignation. This is Noel Trowell off to spend a penny, or should I say 1.2375 cents, independent radio news, Washington County, Durham.
The music goes round and round, capital, 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 capitalism.
This week, a 13-year-old Egyptian girl swam the channel in record time. When asked why she did it, she replied, "I did it for Sadat." This so impressed us at LBC that we sent the radio car down to the beach at Brighton to talk to other channel swimmers.
Oh,
Hello, madam. Why have you just swum the channel?
I did it for Alvin.
Mm-hmm. And now you, sir. I believe you and your entire family have just swum the channel?
Oh, yeah, and that's only the half of it. Well, first we rowed across the Mediterranean on a 5-barred gate, then we walked across Spain in the south of France, and now we've just swum the channel.
That's quite amazing. And why did you do it?
We did it for Clarkson's. We had to.
This week saw the opening of the new musical Ted, Enoch, Reggie, Alec and Bert. A controversial show about the four young lads from the Midlands who found fame and fortune throughout the world. Well, I have with me in the studio the man who wrote the musical, Nev Chamberlain. Nev, can you perhaps describe the plot of the show for us?
Basically it's very simple and straightforward, Duncan. It's about these four boys and the way in which they became successful and then finally they were destroyed, you know. You see, originally, they were all in a group together, as you know, and they became household names. Then they came under the influence of this fantastic guru, Macmillan Ishii, whose feet they sat, you know, metaphorically. Then after that, they all went their separate ways. You know, Enoch became interested in mysticism. It's reflected in his work now. Reggie's more interested in a commercial success, which is why he and Ted, who sort of had political leanings, fell out. And then the last one, Alec, or Jingo, as he's obviously better known, he was quite happy just to retire to his house in the country and make a few guest appearances, and that's, you know...
In the show, we see that there was another member of the group in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to him?
Rab. Yeah, well, that's a fascinating story, actually, because there was this personality difference there. I mean, Rab could have been so good. I mean, he was always popular, the fans loved him. You know, it was fantastic. I think he's working in a sausage factory.
Yes. Fantastic. Well, could you describe the music for us in the
Yeah, certainly. We use the songs, obviously, by which they're best known. For instance, I expect you'll remember this one.
Reginald Maudling, writing the words of a speech that nobody will hear. Let's make him appear, all the wealthy people. Where do they all come from? All the wealthy people.
Yes, that's lovely, yeah.
And then, of course, there's this, which, well, I say it myself, it has become the showstopper. It's Ted singing Norwegian Wood.
Had a job, or should I say, it once had me. I was Prime Minister then, look at me now, I'm all at sea. They asked me to rule, and I said that I thought that I could. And I ran the country just like a Norwegian would. On the dole, just like a pro, but I've got soul. A wop, wop, a loo, wop, a lop, bam, boom. Teddy, I'm ready, ready, Teddy, I'm ready. I'm ready, ready, Teddy, I'm ready. I'm ready, ready, Teddy, I'm ready, ready, Teddy, too. Rock and roll.
Yeah, that's a lovely song, too. And do you see the real group, the group in real life, ever getting together again, then?
Oh, I doubt it now. I mean, Enoch's got his own group together now. He's touring with them. Ted's hoping for a comeback in the charts, you know, but it's touch and go. There's a competition, obviously, between him and another of the old groups, you know, one of the old groups in the 60s, Harry and the Dreamers, as you know. But, who knows, you know.
Well, finally, perhaps we could hear just one more song from the show.
Yeah, sure. This is the last number from the show. It's sung by all members of the cast together.
When the Tory party's deep in trouble, Central Office comes to me saying, speak some wisdom on TV. We have got a bunch of patrons known as Aims of Industry, and we've got Sir Alec up family tree. Vote for me.
Vote for me.
Vote for me.
Vote for me.
Vote for me. If you don't,
you'll be in trouble.
And with one musical starting off in its first week's run, another musical is moving into its 15th year. We take you now to the stage and another performance of The Sound of Music.
You are 45, going on 46.
Just how are decisions made in the Labour government? We take you over now to a meeting between Mr. Callaghan and Mr. Wilson in the Cabinet Office at No. 10 Downing Street.
As I see it, Harold, there's only one solution to the Cyprus problem. We've got to divide the island into two halves, equal halves, give one half to the Catholics and the other half to the Protestants.
Jim, you're a bloody genius. Now get out of my office.
Hello, irresponsible.
Hello, mate.
I used to wonder what I could do to help until I tasted GB75. Now I take over power stations, parachute into sewage farms.
GB75, bottled exclusively by Sterling Walker Distilleries.
It's the right wing.
The news of the Edinburgh Free Festival has alarmed many of the local residents, worried by the sort of effect that the influx of 10,000 intellectuals might have on the neighbourhood. Similar events in the past have resulted in strangely dressed festival goers streaming into the small East Coast city, often staying on for weeks afterwards, causing problems for the police and damaging local crops. To find out the latest developments in the festival, we spoke to Councillor James McGeegan, who is leading the action group that is trying to stop the festival continuing. Mr. McGeegan, what sort of plans do you have for stopping the festival?
Well, we originally thought of spreading piles of bingo cards on the pavements, because we know that intellectuals don't like that sort of thing at all.
What are your main objections to the festival?
Well, these intellectuals come up here with their weird habits and their opera glasses, and, you know, obviously we're worried about our children being influenced with their, you know, their mind-bending experimental plays, like 21 Days in a Rice Krispie Factory, I believe is the title of one of them that they've got. So, and we feel there's a very real danger if they start experimenting with these, then they go on to the heavier stuff, like, you know, Molière and that. And then there's the noise. I mean, can you imagine what it's like trying to get to sleep with Giulini's Verdi Requiem going on through to the wee small hours?
Well, then I spoke to Mr. Peter Diamante, the festival's organiser. Mr. Diamond.
Call me Pete.
Pete, yes. Can I ask you, how would you answer the criticisms of the locals about your festival?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, this festival is... It's not an expression of, well, coming together culturally, you know, if you like, getting your Edinburgh rocks off and, like, you know, well, giving a few groups like the London Philharmonic a chance to, well, you know, man.
Are you well enough organised to handle a festival of this size?
Yeah, man, I mean, we got special tents for people who get too much... culture, you know, like if some of the kids take in a lunchtime play and then follow that with some exhibition and then drop a couple of tickets to the Quest in the evening, well, kid might feel a bit sick, man. So we've got emergency tents for that, like, and I mean, we look at it this way. We're just here to have a bit of, you know, we want people to have a bit of peace and love. Hello, sweetie.
Kung Fu Wisdom.
I seek not to know the answers, but to understand the questions Grasshopper. What do they call cows in Lapland?
What, master?
Eskimos, Grasshopper.
Oh.
Why do Swiss cows have bells round their necks, Grasshopper?
I don't know, master.
Because their horns don't work.
Oh. I hear he's leaving, Friday.
Who, Grasshopper?
Robinson Crusoe, master.
Grasshopper, you put one over me there, all right.
Forget it, master. It's Chinatown.
Inflation.
Excuse me, sir. I wonder if you'd mind blowing into this balloon for me.
But there's no reason for that, officer. I'm not drunk.
I'm not suggesting for a minute that there's any good reason for it or that you are drunk. It's just that all the other constables have had their balloons blown up for the policeman's party. And I can't get anybody to blow mine up. Please blow my balloon up.
That was a party political broadcast on behalf of the policeman's party.
Now, for our many common market listeners, we're very happy to bring you the first edition of Listen with the Archers, or Écoutez avec les Archers.
Alors, Dan, qu'est-ce que vous faites dans le cochet?
Ah, bonjour, Ralph, and comment allez-vous? Je regarde les animaux ici.
Wow, quelle ordure, Dan.
Ah, oui, Ralph, beaucoup de manure aujourd'hui.
Allez-vous à la Women's Institute tes dansants cet après-midi?
Oh, oui, Ralph, il faut changer les chaussures avant. Comme est-il, young Jeff?
Oh, il est à Ambridge aujourd'hui, Dan. Il a assassiné le président du Farmers Union.
Ah, pourquoi, Ralph?
Ah, c'était une crime passionnelle.
Ah, j'aime bien les gâteaux.
That was a party political broadcast on behalf of the Say Yes to the Common Market Party.
Citizens Arrest, your chance to be public-spirited. Hello. This week's cautionary tale comes from the front page of Wednesday's Sun. Under the headline, Vicar Was My Lover, ran the following story. Ex-prisoner Gordon Hooper claimed he found 14 passionate notes in his wife's wardrobe on the day he came back from jail. And he said the sexy letters came from the Rev. Nigel Gearing, Minister of St. Stephen's Reformed Church at Leicester, and known locally as The Vicar. Makes you think, doesn't it? Do you know anyone who you think of as The Vicar? The chances are you do. Or perhaps there's someone you've come to regard as The Postman, or maybe even The Baker. Take our tip. Watch out. A lot of people masquerade as a lot of different things. So, when someone comes knocking on the door and claims to be the Betterware man, what'll you do? You'll call a policeman, won't you? But how do you know he's a policeman?
And what about that letter from the Philippines? Uncle Jim seemed to think that was pretty important. So be on hand, all of you, at the same time tomorrow for another exciting episode of The Mysterious Stranger with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
True Romances, number 17.
It was really strange.
Tell me about it.
Well, I met this boy, and he was, well, you know, something really special. I mean, he had real class, very nicely spoken and everything, and lovely clothes, and a smashing car with four-track stereo and everything.
So?
Well, he wanted me to kiss him.
And?
Well, I hardly met him, you know, so I said that I didn't really know him well enough. And then he looked so sad, and he told me that he was a prince, and that if I kissed him, he would change back to being a frog, which is what he always wanted to be. So anyway, I kissed him.
And what happened?
He went, "Ah, oh, c'est magnifique. Je n'aime pas la vie de prince. Venez coucher."
That was a party political broadcast on behalf of the Say No to the Common Market Party.
The Metropolitan Police and the headline writers of Fleet Street present The Gangbusters, starring Ralph Reeder and the lovely Dawn Swoops. Thrill to the knock on the door, tremble with the flying squad. And if you want more information, contact your local police station, who will be helping you with your inquiries in The Gangbusters.
Hello and welcome to the Nonentity interview, in which we talk to someone you've probably never heard of, and most likely never will, about the sort of things they've been doing to make them such a nonentity. Our guest for the next 3 hours is Jane Smith, once a temporary secretary, now a trainee bank clerk. Jane, can you remember how you first got started and in fact became a nonentity?
I think it was about 1965, Paul. No, it must have been earlier than that. No, I can't remember, actually.
And who do you think were the main influences on your early career?
Mainly Mr. Henderson, who was a friend of my father's. Well, he was very ordinary indeed. I used to watch him going to work in the mornings and then later on coming home in the evening, sitting down and watching the telly with the evening news on his lap.
And what are your next future plans? What sort of next projects do you have in mind?
Well, I might go to the post office on Saturday to buy some stamps. And this weekend I'll probably pay the milk bill and have a cigarette after lunch.
Now, I gather you've just returned from something very boring.
Well, yes, that's right, Paul. I went to the dry cleaners at Dolly's Hill, collected my skirt and came back. And it was really quite an experience. I waited 10 minutes for the bus, and while I was standing there, a car drove past and a man threw a sweetie wrapper in a litter bin.
Well, with most of your time obviously taken up being an nonentity, I'm fascinated to know how you relax.
Well, funny you should ask me that, Paul. What I usually do to get away from it all, as it were, is go out in the middle of the night to Hyde Park, tear off all my clothes and spray gold tinsel paint over my face and ride a giraffe through the dining room at the Ritz, hurling whale blubber at old ladies and crying out, "Lift up ye gates, O ye doors," in Russian, while I perform sword-swallowing acts in front of cabinet ministers and set fire to busts of Beethoven with do-it-yourself napalm kits and play on transparent bagpipes while my mother swings from the hands of Big Ben, dressed as John the Baptist's nanny, and then sometimes...
If you go away, please don't go away.
Hey, where are you going? Come back!
We take you over now to the home of Dougie Cameron, LBC newsreader, just after he has returned home from work.
Hello, dear. What sort of day did you have?
I read the news today, oh boy.
With cheque frauds on the increase throughout London, it's becoming increasingly important for people to be able to recognise a bouncing cheque. What does a bouncing cheque look like? Or more importantly, what does it sound like?
Yadulesa nepoyedu, yadulesa nepoydu, on by na mnie hajny přišel, vzal by mi tam sekeru.
Hello and welcome to The Dogs, where the first race is about to start. It's an interesting field we have here too, with Lassie on the inside lane, then the royal entry, the popular corgi Princey. In lane three, it's Rin Tin Tin, and next to him is the Securicor Alsatian. Then it's Clement Freud, the Lady and the Tramp, and the police drug squad Sniffer in the outside lane. And they're under starter's orders now,
and they're off. And away goes Securicor's Alsatian, with Lassie still at the starting line, smiling for photographers. And Princey, the royal entry, is doing well. Securicor's Alsatian is having a go at a rather shifty-looking man in the tote, and Rin-Tin-Tin is neck and neck with Clement Freud. The drug squad sniffer has disappeared into the crowd now, and the lady and the tramp are still at the starting line. Here's the man with the bucket of water now. But who's this coming up on the outside lane? Good heavens, it's Walter the Werewolf, risen from the dead. A late entry, a very late entry, and he's eaten Rin-Tin-Tin and the royal corgi. So now there's only Lassie and Clement Freud to beat. So it's Walter the Werewolf coming through first, and Walter the Werewolf first. And over to you, Harry Carpenter.
Well, that's the news from Walthamstow Dog Track. Still on sport, we hear from Olympia that Harvey Smith came first in the threatening gesture class with a clear round of perfectly executed V-signs. David Broom was second with his clenched fist waved under the judges' noses, and Captain Mark Phillips came third by sticking his tongue out at the senior judge. Pat Smythe was unplaced with her Yaboo sucks to you, and the Italian team are lodging a protest that their gestures of slapping the upper forearm were misunderstood by judges who didn't realise just how rude and offensive they were.
Finally, we take you over to hear the new pianist at Beebe's Cocktail Lounge in Florida.
Programs may come and go, but Punchline's jokes carry on forever.
And for the last half hour, you've been listening to this week's efforts, put together by Duncan Campbell,
David Walsh,
Petra Markham,
Brian Gascoigne,
Miroslav Kramosta,
and Andrew Nichols.
Heather Phipps was the engineer, and in a return match, the USS Enterprise defeated the Klingons by 235 Thargs to 143-362.
So listen out again for Garner Ted Armstrong giving you the plain facts about
the world tomorrow.